This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
Kenyans cast their ballots Tuesday for a new president, governors, and legislators, among other posts.
That's VOA's Jill Craig reporting from the polls in Nairobi. Details next.
Also, 16 Somali pirates were sentenced yesterday to 7 years in prison in Mumbai, India. And South Africa's embattled president, Jacob Zuma, narrowly survives an eighth attempt by Parliament to unseat him in a vote of no confidence.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, Kenyans cast their ballots today for a new president, governors, and legislators, among other posts. VOA's Jill Craig reports from the polls in Nairobi.
Kenyans stood in line for hours Tuesday to cast ballots in hotly contested nationwide polls, facing rain and both cold and hot weather conditions throughout the day. Helen Mazito is a 32-year-old voter from the Githogoro slum in Nairobi. She waited in line for well over 7 hours, but says she isn't complaining.
Let me say the election mode is good. People are voting. Once they vote, they are going home. Nothing bad has occurred. No bad event. People are responding well.
33-year-old voter Emmanuel Musundi Wamukundi waited for more than 4 hours at his polling station in Nairobi. He says the lines were a bit disorganized in the beginning, but otherwise things seem to be running smoothly.
I mean, it's patriotism, you know, this is for my country, you know, and I want to be involved in it. I want my voice to be heard. And, you know, it's the only thing I can do to change things.
The Electoral Commission said heavy rain hampered voting in three parts of the country, Turkana North, Baringo, and Samburu, and helicopters were required to airlift materials and polling officials. The commission said voting would be extended in any polling stations that got a late start. The presidential race pits the current president, Uhuru Kenyatta, against his longtime rival, opposition leader Raila Odinga. Both candidates expressed confidence Tuesday as they cast their ballots in Nairobi. Odinga told supporters gathered outside his polling station to continue mobilizing to come out and vote. This victory is ours. Kenyatta said the ruling Jubilee coalition had run a very positive campaign and that he believes Kenyans want us to continue moving forward. Former U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry and former Senegalese Prime Minister Aminata Touré visited Jamhuri High School in Nairobi as co-leaders of the U.S.-based Carter Center Election Observation Mission. Kerry referenced the long lines he'd seen at polling stations as a sign of the commitment of Kenyan voters.
It's too early for us to draw any kinds of conclusions, so we're not. But obviously, given what's happened in the past and given the stakes for the future, this is a very, very important election, and clearly the citizens of Kenya are taking it very, very seriously.
Kenya's Electoral Commission is using biometric voter identification and electronic vote transmission systems to conduct the elections. The vote is seen as a key test for the commission after voting technology failed during the last polls in 2013, sparking allegations of vote rigging. Like so many Kenyans, voter Francis Mutiso Matheka is urging peace above all else in these elections.
I would love to tell fellow Kenyans to vote peacefully. We need this country after today, after tomorrow, and this country is greater than any one of us.
Also calling for a peaceful outcome Monday was former U.S. President Barack Obama, the son of a native-born Kenyan. Obama issued a statement urging voters in his ancestral homeland to reject violence and incitement, respect the will of the people, urge security forces to act professionally and neutrally, and work together no matter the outcome. The winner of the presidential election must receive 50% of all votes and 25% or more of votes in at least 25 of Kenya's 47 counties. If neither candidate hits that threshold, a runoff will take place. Results are expected by Friday, though by law, the Electoral Commission has up to 7 days to announce. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Continuing our coverage of the Kenya elections, we turn to the country's second largest city, Mombasa. VOA's Jody Kapua spoke to reporter Tharaya Mwadzai, who is in the coastal city.
The voters in Mombasa today really turned out in many large centres. They queued since morning from 5 a.m. Many streamed in the polling stations as from 3 a.m. Then the polling station opened at 6 a.m. for them to start voting. Voting started at least by 6:15 in some polling stations.
Were there any problems at the polling stations that prevented people from voting?
Voter bribery may have caused some people not to have voted, but they were very far away from the polling station. It happened far away from the polling station. It was not inside, it was outside. But then now in the polling station, everything went on smoothly.
Now, you're talking about voter bribery. Would you explain what you mean? Are you saying that voters were actually paid to cast ballots?
When I say voter bribery, I mean that supporters from the different political parties pull out their supporters out of the line so that they can get money and start to win votes.
Was it only their supporters, or did they take any voter that was in line and offer them money?
Particular supporters that they knew they were from that area.
So are you saying this was a reward, in a sense, for their turning out to cast ballots for a local candidate?
Exactly.
Any idea how much the payment was for each voter?
200, some 500. It depends on the location where one comes from. It wasn't fixed amount.
You saw this happen near a polling station. Do you have any idea how many voters were given money?
Yes, I have. At least 20 to 30 voters.
Have you been to any other polling stations in Mombasa where you saw this happen?
In other stations in Mombasa, there were irregularities, like people were not seeing their information on the system, on the IEBC system. So they were then returned not to vote. There were no other irregularities.
So their names did not appear on the voter registration rolls?
Yes, on the digital portal of the IEBC. Some names didn't appear.
Overall, was voting peaceful?
Yes, exactly. It was very peaceful. People were very calm, and they are eager to wait for the results upon voting exercise ending. As up to now, people are still queuing outside. They're still waiting to cast their vote.
Now, is there any concern about post-election violence in Mombasa?
Exactly. Voters are really worried that if the politicians or the presidential candidates don't agree to accept the results, they think that the post-election violence might turn up again. That's why they maintained peaceful and calmness in their respective polling stations.
That was reporter Tharaya Mwadzaya from Mombasa, Kenya. She spoke to VOA's Jody Kapua.
South African President Jacob Zuma has survived a no-confidence vote today. Zuma has previously weathered 7 similar votes, but never any under the cover of secrecy. A successful vote this time would have required President Zuma and his entire cabinet to resign. A successful motion needed 201 votes, and the opposition holds only 151. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg on the speeches ahead of the historic decision.
As it has 7 times before, South Africa's ruling party on Tuesday came out strongly against the opposition's motion to remove President Zuma, who has become increasingly unpopular while embroiled in long simmering corruption scandals. The way the African National Congress tells it, the vote is a threat to the party that slept power in the nation's first democratic government in 1994. Defense Minister and party stalwart Nosiviwe Mapisa Nqakula.
As you yourselves in the opposition benches have said, the ANC is the target. Removing the ANC from power is the main aim. You've said it. Let's go to a general election. Let's go to a general election. We should not use other tactics to get rid of a governing party. That would be akin to a coup.
The Opposition Democratic Alliance, or DA, which brought the motion to Parliament, says Zuma's corruption allegations make him unfit to hold the highest office in South Africa. Most recently, a leaked trove of emails and documents alleged that Zuma had improper business and political dealings with a wealthy Indian family, the Guptas. The country is mired in deep recession and high unemployment, and its credit ratings have been downgraded since Zuma fired Finance Minister Praveen Gordhan in March. DA leader Musi Maimane.
I never imagined that one day I would be here in this parliament fighting a new form of oppression, a corrupt system that keeps our people imprisoned in poverty. If you told me that one day our democratically elected president would end up corrupted and captured by a criminal syndicate, I would have never believed you. But here we are. We've all traveled along different roads, but we've arrived at the same destination. We all have a choice today to do what is right, what is just, and what is honorable.
Opposition parties had asked for the ballot to be held in secret, in a bid to embolden critics within the famously disciplined ANC to turn against their leader. Andries Malapitulama of the opposition Ahang Party said his party will support the motion because it blames the economic decline on Zuma and compared those who continue to support him to pro-apartheid stooges.
President Zuma is a weapon of economic destruction. Those who will vote for Zuma are worse than those who killed Ruth First and Chris Hani.
Honorable Member, President or Mr. Zuma, let's obey the rules of the House, okay?
Already, several high-profile party stalwarts, including the former finance minister fired earlier this year by Zuma, have publicly called on Zuma to step down. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Hei Suhib, 17 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Kenyans cast their ballots today for a new president. 16 Somali pirates were sentenced yesterday to 7 years in prison in Mumbai, India. And South African President Jacob Zuma has survived a no-confidence vote today. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
In more news around the continent, more than 30 fishermen have been killed in two separate attacks by Boko Haram militants on Lake Chad. AFP reports Boko Haram attacked the islands of Duguri and Dabar Wanzam on Saturday. However, it's taken days for news of the attacks to be made public because communication in the area is poor. One fisherman was spared by the attackers. He was forced to sail a canoe loaded with 12 bodies to the fishing hub of Baga as a warning to others not to fish on the lake.
And a Nigerian court has ordered the permanent confiscation of a $37 million luxury apartment complex owned by a former oil minister. The court took the action as part of a corruption case against Dizani Alison Maduki. In February, a court seized more than $110 million from his bank account. The investigation is also looking into property the former minister allegedly bought with stolen government funds. Alison Maduki denies any wrongdoing. He was oil minister under former president. Good luck, Jonathan.
The International Organization for Migration reports that since April, its search operations in northern Niger have led to the rescue of 1,000 migrants making a perilous journey across the Sahara Desert en route to Libya. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from IOM headquarters in Geneva.
The International Organization for Migration says it plans to expand its search and rescue operations given the success of its mission and the increasing dangers facing migrants in the desert. The IOM says it will open more so-called flow migration points to better monitor the travelers and provide them with help. The organization says because the desert is so vast, it is not possible to know how many people have died, although the number is believed to be in the thousands. Despite the dangers, thousands of migrants from impoverished African countries risk their lives in hopes of achieving a better economic future in Europe. Spokeswoman Olivia Hayden tells VOA the migrants are at greater risk than before, as they increasingly are being taken by smugglers along more dangerous routes through the sweltering desert to Libya.
More dangerous routes typically mean that they're longer, they're less close to water sources. There's so few wells and water sources throughout the Sahara Desert, so it means people are going for longer without food, without water. It also means that they're more open to other banditries and other criminal groups on these routes as well, because it's not as secure as maybe the previous routes that have, usual routes that have been used.
Hayden says smugglers often hold the migrants for ransom and that the migrants often are abandoned when the smugglers run out of fuel or decide their human cargo no longer has any monetary value. She says migrants who are rescued are taken to transit centers in northern Niger, where they are offered help and medical assistance before they continue their journey. She says the IOM will repatriate those who seek help in returning home. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Africa is one of the most heavily impacted regions of the world for modern slavery. But one trafficking hotspot is beginning to turn the tide, and that is Ghana. A U.S.-founded program is working with the nonprofit organization Free the Slaves to rescue children from forced labor on fishing boats. They are identifying the key reasons why parents send their children to the boats, and they are helping entire communities prevent more child trafficking. VOA's Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick spoke to Joha Broaimi, Ghana Country Director for Free the Slaves. She asked him what life is like for enslaved children on the boats.
They are often, of course, not with their parents, but with all these strangers who they call masters. Often these children work from dusk to dawn with little food and no supervision by any adult. So often you'll find them in the boats, either paddling the boats, drawing nets, diving under water to untangle nets. They don't have any access to education or healthcare. Both verbal and physical abuse is very rampant. And you can often see a lot of physical scars on these children who work on the lake.
Why is child trafficking happening?
The major causative factor is poverty, which is both a cause and a consequence of trafficking. The extreme poverty of parents, you know, lead them to a lot of vulnerabilities. And traffickers and other extended family members prey on these vulnerabilities of the families. And of course, also we have the, you know, the normal African or Ghanaian tradition of your parents helping you to take care of your children, other family members, be they external, extended or nuclear family members helping you to take care of your children. But over the years, this system has been abused. And so extended family members may approach a family member and say, can I have your child to stay with me? The child will go to school, I'll help you take care of the child. But often they will send these children over the lake and refuse to put them in school, instead engage them in forced labor. And then also you have the political aspect to it, where the weak enforcement of laws and policies and the lack of prosecution and punishment of perpetrators is sort of giving way for this practice to happen.
What is the U.S. Child Protection Compact with Ghana?
The Child Protection Compact is a unique partnership that is signed between the U.S. government and the government of Ghana. I think it's the first of its kind, signed in June 2015, with the main goal of developing a holistic program aimed at eradicating child trafficking or bringing it to the barest minimum through a unique partnership between civil society and government, specific government ministries and departments, to strengthen a system that will lead to rescue, rehabilitation, and effective reintegration of children, as well as strengthening the systems to prosecute traffickers.
Tell me a little bit about how you're helping families and communities and the Ghanaian government overcome modern slavery.
Free the Slaves have a community abolition model which we use in eradicating slavery from one community to the other. And this model is pretty much based on strengthening community existing structures and systems to effectively combat trafficking in the communities. Our approach also involves a lot of capacity building of government agencies to effectively respond to the need of community members. So this bridges the gap and mistrust between community members and government agencies, so they are able to effectively serve them. So the emphasis on the approach is at the community level to raise awareness through different strategies, whilst also advocating with government to provide special social protection services for victims and survivors of trafficking.
Johabra Umi is Ghana Country Director for Free the Slaves. He spoke to VOA's Heidi Adams Fitzpatrick.
In Mumbai, India, 16 Somali pirates were sentenced yesterday to 7 years in prison and fined over $200. Indian media report the Somalis were convicted in the hijacking of a fishing vessel that had sailed from Iran in 2011. The crew members were held hostage. Last week, 15 Somalis were sent to prison on piracy charges. More will be sentenced in the coming weeks. In all, India has detained 118 Somalis on piracy charges.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
Hello Africa, this is James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5 and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. do meet artists too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.